We think we know Laura Ingalls Wilder, the pioneer girl born 150 years ago near the shores of Lake Pepin, so the story goes. The Little House series, 8 famous books on her pioneer life, have sold over 60 million copies in 45 languages. They were adapted for the TV series in the 70s and 80s as one of the longest-running, most popular TV shows in TV history, mind you, still in syndication. But the autobiographical novels don't tell a complete story. This hour of the morning show, we're exploring the life of Laura Ingalls Wilder. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Caroline Fraser, she is the editor of the Library of America edition of Laura Ingalls Wilder's Little House books. She is the author of the new book, Prairie Fires, The American Dreams of Laura Ingalls Wilder. Caroline, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, for many of us, you know, Laura Ingalls Wilder holds a really special place in our childhoods. I have the full series. It's still on our bookshelf. I have the series and then some with Rose's works. Whether we loved the books or the TV show, we grew up with these stories. I'm wondering, your livelihood is Laura Ingalls Wilder. How did this happen? How did you get into this line of work?
Well, it's been a long time coming. I mean, I, too, was a fan as a kid and read all the books and loved them. I think I had sort of a special feeling about them because my family, some of whom originally lived in Wisconsin and pioneered there, were immigrants and covered wagon people. And so I kind of felt like Laura's stories were my stories in a way. And I think a lot of people felt that way, especially if they came from the Midwest. So I started writing about her a while back when a biography of her daughter came out that claimed that the daughter had ghostwritten the series, and that really interested me. So I kind of dove into that. So it's been quite a long period of time that I've been working on it.
Does that make it extra difficult for someone like yourself to sit down and really try to untangle the fact from the fiction of her life?
You know, it is a complicated story, and people have been working on this for decades now. And we do have Laura's original manuscripts for the novels and for a really interesting memoir that she wrote before the novels called Pioneer Girl, which was recently published for the first time. So people have been looking at this issue for a while, but it does take quite a bit of work to kind of compare what she wrote to the various draft versions that are available and then to the published books themselves. And the more you look at them, the more you realize how fictionalized the books really are.
And we'll get to that point in just a moment, but it's been 60 years since the death of Laura Ingalls Wilder, and yet people remain really enamored with her work and, to a similar extent, her life story. What is it about her that really resonates, do you think?
Well, I think that people, of course, do love the books. I think they're this really interesting combination of very comforting, you know, the books convey a real sense of safety and security, and people read them over and over again. But they're also incredible stories of survival, and the family in them survives all these sort of terrifying natural disasters. But I think that they also open a window on a lot of our history, frontier history, the Plains Indian Wars. So they tell us a lot about ourselves, and I think that that's one of the things that keeps us coming back to them.
And your book brings more of that context to the real world she was living in, a real world of extreme poverty met by the Great Depression in the 1870s. it's also this examination of early American history, putting Laura's story in this context and what's happening, as you said, in the country when it comes to things like the treatment of Native Americans. Why did you think it was really important to include this type of context?
Well, I became more aware of this when I was working on the Library of America editions, because I was writing little explanatory notes on the text so that people could look things up in the back as they were reading the books. And a lot of this history I hadn't been aware of myself. And the more I read about it, the more fascinated I was. So I wanted to open that up for people and give them a sense of how much her life encapsulated these different phases of the frontier and the whole process of what was termed manifest destiny. I think that we've lost sight a little bit of the importance of what people believed about what they were doing and how much that colored their experience. And Wilder's books are an incredible way into that mind view, if you will, because it just captures that sense that the pioneers were doing something almost providential by moving out across the West and doing what they deemed to be something useful with the land.
Taking extreme risk, too, not just physical risk of crossing these rushing waters after storms, but also the risk of leaving the land you own and trying to go somewhere else. Talk about this element of Laura Ingalls Wilder.
Right. I think that often when you read the books as an adult, you pick up these things that aren't possibly as clear to children. And one of those things is when you read the very first book, Little House in the Big Woods, which takes place in the Big Woods of Wisconsin, you realize that the family experienced a level of security there that they wouldn't find again, really, ever. And so it becomes clear, both in the life and in the work, that if they had stayed in Wisconsin, they probably would have been a little better off. But, of course, they didn't. Laura's father, Charles Ingalls, had a kind of a restless streak, and he took the family to Missouri and Kansas and Minnesota and Iowa and ultimately Dakota Territory. And every place they went, they would experience different adventures, but also different forms of privation. And they were just never really able to establish the kind of security they might have had if they'd stayed in Wisconsin.
We're talking right now with author Caroline Fraser. Her new book is Prairie Fires, The American Dreams of Laura Ingalls Wilder. You can join in this conversation, 800-642-1234. Did you grow up on the Little House books, or perhaps you watched the TV show? Did you watch and read as a child? What did you think? Do you read the books to your own children now? Does it matter to you if the series isn't completely true? A true retelling of Wilder's childhood. 800-642-1234. Caroline, we see in your book, what I saw was this extreme poverty that really wasn't there when I read the series from a child's perspective. I didn't understand that element of what poverty meant in the 1800s. While we do have her writings to fall back on, there's still a lot that wasn't accounted for. How did you go about filling the gaps and really understanding the poverty that her family confronted?
Well, one of the things was that I read a great deal about the experience of farmers on the frontier, and that, I think, is a critical piece of the puzzle that that you don't find a lot of explanation for in the books themselves. It was incredibly difficult what these farmers were doing. They were going out into an area that in many cases was too arid for what they called dry land farming, which was, you know, basically farming without any form of irrigation. And you see this again and again with Charles Ingalls. He faces issues with drought, with the locust plague of the 1870s, and just not being able to reliably bring in an income from the farm itself. So even though he's famous as a homesteader and somebody who did, in fact, prove up on his land and successfully completed that process, he wasn't really able to hold on to the land for very long because he couldn't make a living off of it. And when you look at the history, you see that that was actually quite common.
Take us back to her birth in Wisconsin and what the family was facing at that time, several miles, as we know, from the shores of Lake Pepin.
Right. Well, the family at that point had another one older child, Mary, who had been born just around the end of the Civil War. And the family was doing okay on their land in Wisconsin. They had quite a bit of family in the area. There was a school nearby that Mary had started attending, and Laura went to it briefly. So a lot of that sort of warm family feeling that you get from Little House in the Big Woods was, in fact, very much a part of their lives. Charles' parents lived nearby, some of his siblings. So it's interesting that he then sets off to Kansas, where they ended up eventually, and where they did not own land. And that experience was actually quite dangerous for the family. When Charles learned that the land in Wisconsin that he had owned was not going to be paid for by the farmer who had tried to buy it, he then brought the family back to Wisconsin, and they again lived there for a short period. But he was really hoping, I think, to strike it rich by establishing a successful wheat farm, and he came to feel that he couldn't do that in Pepin because it didn't yet have a railroad close by. So that may have been one of the reasons why he then took the family to Minnesota.
You write that they moved a lot. That by the time Laura was 18, she had walked away from at least a dozen homes. Why was the family often on the move? Or was this part of the lifestyle?
Well, they just encountered difficulties and disasters everywhere they went. I mean, this is the books give a very kind of secure view of the family life in some ways. They emphasize that the success of Charles Ingalls as a provider, because Laura really wanted to memorialize her parents in these books. So she tended to kind of gloss over anything that took away from that view. But in reality, they were really searching for land that they could hold on to, and they really failed in many of these places. In Kansas, they had to leave because the land may have been too expensive to buy. In Minnesota, they suffered this terrible misfortune during the grasshopper plagues, and Charles was forced to sell that land. They then went to Iowa, which was kind of a disastrous period for the family. The children had measles there, which may have contributed to Mary later becoming blind. So it really was kind of one thing after another, and the difficulty of trying to hang on to land as a farmer when you were completely undercapitalized, when you didn't have enough money to fall back on, was just devastating, really, to the family.
We're talking with author Caroline Fraser. She writes, Laura Ingalls Wilder has become a caricature, a brand, a commodity. In addition to the long-running hit TV show, the Little House series has been adapted in print, on stage, and on screen. We're piecing together the life of Laura Ingalls Wilder. Her new book, Caroline Fraser's new book, is Prairie Fires, The American Dreams of Laura Ingalls Wilder. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Are you a fan of the Little House books or the TV show? Do you read the books to your own children? Does it matter to you that if the series isn't a completely true retelling of Wilder's childhood? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll return in just a moment. The new biography of Laura Ingalls Wilder helps to provide clarity to a life story and untangle her story from the American myths her novels help portray through the Little House series, the stories of life in a covered wagon. We're learning about the true complexities of living a life of poverty and moving from place to place, hard hit by the Great Depression in the 1870s. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Author Caroline Fraser's new book is Prairie Fires, The American Dreams of Laura Ingalls Wilder. What do you want to know about Wilder's time in Wisconsin? Why did she leave? Have you gone to see her homesteads? 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Barbara, who joins us from Janesville now. Hi, Barbara. Go ahead.
Good morning. This is a very interesting subject. I started reading Laura Ingalls Wilder when I was 7 years old. I had a set of the books. The books were read to all of my children. Over the years, I have visited all of the home sites except Kansas. There really wasn't a permanent home built there. But one of the your guest had mentioned they left Kansas for financial reasons. As I recall, the books relate that they left Kansas because it was still an Indian territory and hadn't been open for settlement. The other, as she was saying, discrepancies between the real and the book versions, there was no mention in the book, the Little House books, about their time in Burr Oak, Iowa, which was actually the basis for the television show. And I would suspect that part of that was it was another difficult time for the family, but also that's where they lost a child when they lived in Burr Oak. So all of those things probably combined. I would recommend anyone who's a Laura Ingalls Wilder fan to visit the final homestead that she and El Manzo had in Mansfield, Missouri. I did that several years ago, and it's interesting to see the house that El Manzo built, and then he added on to it. I'm a tall person. I have to get down on my knees to wash dishes in her sink. And then the house that their daughter had built for them, and they lived in for a bit, but then move back to the original house. Like I said, if you're a fan of Laura, you need to see that.
Well, Barbara, thank you so much for those insights. Let's get Caroline to jump in here. First, leaving Kansas. Help us with that detail.
Yeah, the Kansas story is fascinating because as Barbara was mentioning, the family was living on Osage land. Indian territory was in Oklahoma, but the land did not belong to the settlers. Charles Ingalls didn't own the piece of property that he built his little house on. They were, in fact, squatters, and part of what was a very powerful squatter movement in Kansas, which was known as the squatter state, because all these white settlers had poured into these areas, hoping that the federal government was going to open them for settlement. And in fact, the government did so very shortly after the Ingalls left. And the reason, though, that Charles Ingalls apparently took his family back to Wisconsin is because the farmer in Wisconsin who had bought his property there had failed to pay up on it, and so it became available again. And we also think that he didn't have enough money to buy the land that he was squatting on in Kansas. So there was a combination of factors at work there, as there often would be. He just couldn't come up with all the money. But one of the fascinating things the caller raised is this whole history of the home sites, which are so fascinating, and thousands of people visit these sites every year. There are amazing historical archives at some of these places, and lots of artifacts, especially in Mansfield, which the caller was mentioning, the Rocky Ridge farmhouse that was designed, much of it by Laura and built by Almanzo and other workers. And it's just fascinating to see what a real farmhouse was like at that time.
What about Burr Oak, Iowa? Barbara raised that as well, mm-hmm. the TV series based on the family's time there.
Yeah, I think that the TV series was actually set in Walnut Grove, Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure how much they did about Iowa, but Burr Oak, Iowa was a fascinating period for the family, although a really tragic one. Just before they moved there, their one son that was born to the family, little Freddie Ingalls, died after less than a year. And that was a real tragedy for the family. They were helping to operate a hotel in Burr Oak, and it was quite a difficult time. There were all these debts that the family incurred for doctor's bills and so forth, and they ended up leaving that town in the middle of the night because Charles Ingalls couldn't come up with the money to pay his debts. And Laura left this entirely out of her series because I think she couldn't find a way to make it sound like a positive experience.
Was it true she was trying not to make life too scary for young readers? Was she trying to diminish the real complexity and the real trauma that was going on here?
Yeah, that was definitely a factor. She was very close to her father, really loved him, lost him relatively early on. And I think in the novel, she was really trying to memorialize him, to recapture her memories about the family. And she didn't like to write about sad things. She wanted to leave that stuff out. She also, you know, at many times felt that certain things were not appropriate for younger readers, but she definitely had this overarching goal to memorialize her parents in a way that emphasized their success. And so what we're left with is this kind of warm sense of the family as a real bastion of homesteading and pioneer living that leaves out some of the darker chapters.
Talking right now with author Caroline Fraser. Her new book is Prairie Fires, and we're talking about the life of Laura Ingalls Wilder. Let's go to Lynn, who joins us from Racine. Hi, Lynn. Go ahead.
Good morning, Kate, and good morning, Caroline.
Good morning.
I had an opportunity to hear you this summer when you gave a presentation at Laura Palooza in Missouri.
Oh, right.
Wait, Laura Palooza. I love it.
Laura Palooza is an academic conference for adults on Laura Ingalls Wilder. And we have had four so far. And this past summer, Caroline was one of the speakers. So if you are a Laura fan, you need to go online and look up Laura Palooza or beyondlittlehouse.com. I enjoy your presentation. I am presently in the process of reading your book. So
great.
I'm anxious to see, you know, how it turns out, if you want to say, because I've been interested in Laura, studying Laura, and presenting on Laura for over 30 years.
Wow.
So
what do you present, Lynn?
I do presentations on the life and writings of Laura Ingalls Wilder. I come in period costume, and then I do some storytelling from the books. I give some background, and if there is room, I can set up 70 feet of display items related to the books, printed material, pictures, and artifacts.
Wow.
Caroline, is this a good way to teach history to kids?
You know, it absolutely is. I think that the, you know, as I said, the books open up this whole historical period about the frontier and about pioneering and white settlement. Obviously, the books were written in a previous era. They include elements that are, I think, troubling to today's audiences. In terms of the way that Native Americans are portrayed. So I think that today they have to be taught in a different way than they were in the past because of those elements that are racist or include romantic stereotypes of Indians. So I'm not sure that they're taught as often in schools to young children as they were, but I think that for older children, they remain a really fascinating way to talk about all of these phases of white settlement and what happened with relationship to the federal government and the Native Americans. And, you know, you just can't emphasize enough how much of a kind of universe the Little House books are. I mean, Lynn is a good example of the kind of ways that people engage with these books. And Laura Palooza is just a wonderful experience
example
of that whole universe where people do everything from dress and period costumes. At Laura Palooza this summer, there was a woman who showed all the different layers of clothing that people wore at that time and how they dealt with those things when they had to, go to parties and all different phases of life. So it opens up history in a way that history books don't possibly always do. It lets you kind of relive a whole period of our history.
And you're seeing a robust amount of scholarly work still going on about Laura Ingalls Wilder.
Definitely. I mean, there's more interest in her all the time, I think, because more things are becoming available. There are financial documents and deeds and letters and manuscripts. And the more we study these things, the more we learn about certain aspects of her life and why she's really important, not just as a literary artist, but as an historical figure.
Well, Lynn, thank you so much for calling in. Caroline, Laura was married to Elmanzo Wilder in 1885, and while their time together got off to a good start, the ensuing years would be marked by catastrophe after catastrophe. What happened here?
Yeah, they really suffered the travails of Job almost. They get married, as you say, in 1885, and for a short period of time things were well. They were living on a homestead and a tree claim outside of DeSmet, not far from her own family. But what happened was that they experienced what so many people in Dakota Territory would experience, which was uncertain precipitation, drought, periods when crops just could not make it. And so they lost crop after crop. They incurred all kinds of debts for farm machinery and doctor's bills. Laura had her first child, Rose, in 1886. And then there was just this cascade of events where she and Almanzo became ill with diphtheria. He suffered a stroke while recovering, which would really affect him for the rest of his life. He would be disabled by the paralysis that he was left with. And then she has another child who dies shortly thereafter, and their house burns down the same month as that happened. And that was really the end for them in terms of Dakota Territory. They set off on traveling. They stayed with family in Minnesota. They went for a short period to Florida. They were really searching for some place to live where Almanzo could recover. And eventually they would end up in Mansfield, Missouri, in the American South, where they would spend much of the rest of their lives. So it really is kind of a tragic story in many ways. But the remarkable thing is the way in which they recovered, especially Laura would just be tireless in seeking out new kinds of jobs and things that she could do to earn money. She would take in boarders. She waited on tables. She became very active in women's clubs, started writing a column for a farm newspaper. And in these ways, she was able to make enough money to help support the family.
Is it at that point she really gets going with her writing?
Yeah, you know, that whole period when she was writing for the Missouri Ruralist was really a kind of apprenticeship. She did that for around 10 years. At the same time, her daughter, Rose, is becoming a journalist in San Francisco and urging her again and again to write down her stories, because I think Rose had heard these stories as a child many times and recognized their commercial potential. So as Laura is writing her column, she's sometimes sneaking in little vignettes and anecdotes about her childhood, which are really interesting to compare to the books, because we see her father come up and marry. So that's really her apprenticeship as a writer. And then when she's retiring from farming around the age of 60, this is when the Great Depression happens, and in order to try to ensure that they can hang on to their land in Missouri, she sits down and writes her memoir.
Mm. We are exploring the true conditions that Laura Ingalls Wilder lived through. Her Little House books, autobiographical novels, they didn't depict the true telling of Wilder's life. We've learned that Laura Ingalls Wilder didn't think children's books should be so grim, and they shouldn't bear the actual grimness of extreme poverty, for instance. Author Caroline Fraser has filled in the details for us in her new book, Prairie Fires. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the life of Laura Ingalls Wilder? Do you think researchers should be pursuing an accurate telling of her life? Join in 800-642-1234 with your questions or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll be back shortly here on the Ideas Network. The book is Prairie Fires, The American Dreams of Laura Ingalls Wilder. Author Caroline Fraser sifted through unpublished manuscripts, through letters, through diaries, land and financial records to put the Little House books into this larger historical framework. And we're exploring the life of Wilder this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. She survived wildfires, tornadoes, malaria, blizzards, near starvation on the Great Plains in the late 1800s. We know her from the books and the TV series. Are you a fan of the Little House books or the TV show? 800-642-1234. Does it matter if the series isn't completely truthful in portraying Wilder's childhood? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Larry, who joins us from Rockford, Illinois. Hi, Larry. Hi.
Good morning. I love the books, and I'm looking forward to reading Carolyn's book, too. So many things to say. I used to teach from these books when I was teaching social studies. Anyway, you come across the story that in Kansas, between town and the farm, there was a house where travelers would sometimes stop for a short meal, and it was found later that travelers were murdered and buried in the garden, and that Paul was among the vigilantes that went out and did justice to these people.
Right. That is a fascinating story that Laura herself talked about in a speech that she gave in Detroit when she was promoting her fourth book. And that family that you're talking about is called the Bloody Benders, and they were, in fact, serial killers on the Great Plains in the late 1870s and early 1870s, actually. And one of the things that's so fascinating about that story that Laura told is that she fictionalized it because her father actually could have had nothing to do with the vigilante party that she was talking about. We actually think that the vigilantes were made up and fictionalized and became one of these sort of stories that was repeated over and over again in the yellow press of the time. Nobody actually knows who the Benders were or what happened to them. They escaped successfully, and so all we really know about them is a little bit about their victims. One of the things that's been discovered recently is that one of the victims of the Benders was, in fact, a neighbor of the Ingalls, which is an interesting thing, and perhaps they knew about that. Perhaps they learned about it. But one of the really funny things about Laura telling that story is that she told it in the context of saying, oh, this is one of the things I couldn't put in my books because it was too scary for children. And then she goes on to tell the story, which was, in fact, quite horrifying. But she fictionalized it considerably and sort of made it into a tall tale.
Larry, how did you go about teaching from these books?
When we were covering that period in history, we just get them out and read the book. They're, you know, fast reads, and discuss, you know, what was going on, and you know, showing how the West was really an economic colony of the East. They had all the industrialization in the East, but Paul was the victim, really, of, you know, prices set for the material he needed, the machinery and stuff like that, set in the East, and also had to take the prices set in the East for his crops. It was really interesting. A good book by Rose Wilder is Free Land, and that really gets into that kind of material much more than Laura does in her books. It was an awful time for the people out there. They worked so hard and might come up with absolutely nothing at the end.
Well, Larry, thank you so much for the call. Caroline, let's get into this conversation about Rose Wilder Lane, Laura's daughter, and sort out how she was a controversial figure.
Yeah, she was an amazing character in her own right, sort of very driven and ambitious, and had a huge impact on her mother because she, again, as I said, was really responsible for urging her mother to write about her memories. But Rose was a very difficult person for Laura to get along with. They had a really tumultuous relationship, And Rose would eventually edit her mother's work, and in some cases revise it, even introducing sort of patriotic scenes around the 4th of July into a couple of books, which reflected her own political beliefs. Rose would become quite well known later as one of the people who helped launch the libertarian movement. And those things are also reflected a little bit in the books. So they had a really difficult relationship in many ways. And I think at the heart of Prairie Fires is kind of the drama of the relationship between these two women. It was really kind of an unprecedented collaboration between a mother and a daughter.
So where was the tension in this collaboration? Because Rose had her separate writing career going on in San Francisco at the time. And is it fair to say that she served as a ghostwriter for her mother?
You know, I don't think that what she was doing really rose to the level of ghostwriting, which is generally described as when somebody writes something for someone else and does that completely. In other words, there's no real input from the other person except possibly from conversation or something. And we know that Laura wrote her books because we have the original manuscripts that she wrote. What Rose did was to edit them, sometimes fairly heavily, but I think that what she really is best described as is an editor and collaborator, perhaps. But one of the things that was so difficult for them was that they each had a different voice and a view of this material. I think that Laura's view and voice really prevailed over time. She had a much more stoic sensibility than Rose. Rose had a much more highly dramatic and commercial voice, which you can see in her own writing. The previous caller mentioned the novel Free Land, which is almost entirely drawn from her mother's material. There was another Rose novel as well called Let the Hurricane Roar, which also took a great deal of material from Laura's parents' history, and you can see the really sharp differences in their voice when you compare the Little House books with Rose's novels, which are much more commercial in tone and kind of hyper-dramatic.
I keep coming back to the words you used in describing Laura Ingalls Wilder: caricature, commodity, a brand. All of that said, at the end of the day, how would you assess whether the Little House series was this brilliant series, or is it something that we should look at differently today?
Well, I think both of those things are true. I think that the Little House books are literary classics of our culture, but in ways that the entire Little House universe has become a kind of cultural phenomenon, especially through the contributions of the TV show. So I think it's important to look at all of that, to look at why the Little House books are important, why they're great works of literature, of children's literature, but also to look at why these stories became such a huge cultural phenomenon, why they still remain important to us to this day. I think in many ways we want to see the history of our settlement as a successful and prosperous and inspiring story, but in lots of ways it's way more complicated than that.
What do we still not know about Laura Ingalls Wilder?
Oh, well, there's a lot of things, actually. I think that if somebody were to go and try to find her earliest publications, some of those things are really hard to find because not everything has been digitized, not everything is available online. And so I think that we may still discover some earlier writings of hers, possibly in other farm newspapers in Kansas. And there are lots of questions, I think, about their lives that we don't know. There are periods of time when, you know, Laura never kept a diary for much of her life. She kept these really fascinating little travel diaries when they went on trips. But there are whole periods of time when we don't know what she was thinking about what was happening in her life or what Rose was up to. And so who knows what other things might surface over time in terms of letters or other manuscripts.
There seems to be still a great appetite for her work. Jill in Cedarburg emailed, "I am a huge fan of the Little House series and played for hours and hours pretending to be a Pioneer kid in my youth. I am so excited for this book and just requested it for my library system. Out of 15 books, all are out, and I am fourth in line on the hold list, so it seems many others are just as excited." So it seems like there is still this appetite out there, Caroline, to know more about Laura Ingalls Wilder and the life she lived.
Yeah, I think for women especially, she represents a cultural figure and historical figure that has risen in some ways to the importance of our founding fathers in certain ways. I mean, obviously, she was never a political figure. She wasn't a president. She wasn't a general. She didn't act out her life on that stage. But for women, she embodies a whole period of history of and remains, I think, a real inspiration because look at what she did. She lived this incredible life of hardship, and yet at the end, at a time when most people would be putting their feet up and sitting back and taking stock of their life quietly, she sits down with her dime store tablets and a pencil and begins this arduous process of writing out her life. And that, I think, is an extraordinary inspiration to people that in her 60s, she is doing this for us. She is writing this story that enables a lot of us across the country to enter into our own history.
And it seems like it was difficult for her to write this story, that this was difficult to put this on paper.
Exactly. I mean, she often was kept awake all night by her memories, not all of which were happy ones, as you can see. And so it was very difficult, I think, for her to relive some of these experiences, especially things like Mary's blindness and her father's various debts and failures. Because even though she left those out of the book, she was still remembering them as she wrote.
Caroline, in the final moments of this conversation, your thoughts on, are we still going to be reading Laura Ingalls Wilder's work in 50 years, in 100 years, hundreds of years from now?
You know, I think we will, in the same way that we still read Mark Twain and Hawthorne and Melville. I think that even though these were written for children, they enable us to enter into the lives of people from a previous era that was tremendously important in our history. So I do think that they have stood the test of time and will be very important in decades to come.
Well, Caroline, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's been wonderful.
Caroline Fraser is the editor of the Library of America edition of Laura Ingalls Wilder's Little House Books. She's the author of the new book, Prairie Fires, The American Dreams of Laura Ingalls Wilder. This hour of the morning show was produced by Chris Molina and Bill Martins. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. Dave Potraz provided technical direction. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're with us on the Ideas Network. Thanks so much.